Morning. Today's daf in Menachos is Kuf Beis. Okay, we got a big mountain to climb today. It's a challenging daf. I'll stay right on the front end. That way, everyone's expectations will be reduced in terms of how much we're going to get away from walk away with a day like today. But to the best of our ability, obviously, we're going to navigate through the daf. And our focus today is a comment that was made on the bottom of Kuf Alf Amud Aleph. So, but even before we get to that comment, so let's review. Yesterday we started the 12th parak of the Masechta. We are approaching the end of the Masechta. Just another week and a half to go in terms of Dapim, another two parakim to go, 12th and 13th parak of the Masechta. So we started the 12th parak yesterday, and in it, so we talked about redeeming a mincha before it goes into a Kli Sharis. Once it goes into a Kli Sharis, so that's now invested with the Kedusha Zaguf, something with the Kedusha Zaguf cannot be redeemed. That's the starting point of the whole discussion. Now, when it comes to an animal, so it goes from 0 to 100. Okay, not a great analogy, but you understand. In other words, when you're makdish an animal, the animal goes from not being kadosh to having Kedusha Zaguf. But when it comes to a mincha, however, so there's a middle stage. In other words, you are makdish the grain, the wheat, and as such, now it has Kedusha, but not Kedusha Zaguf, only Kedusha Zdamim. And then what you do is then when you prepare it, you're going to grind and sift it, and then you're going to put it into a Kli Sharis, then and only then does it imbue with Kedusha Zaguf. And once it goes into the Kli Sharis, so it has Kedusha Zaguf, and it's not, at that point in time, it is not to be redeemed. What is open for discussion, and was a big part of yesterday's daf, is the following. So when it only has Kedusha Zdamim and it's redeemable, can I redeem it if, let's say, it's Tahor, meaning there's nothing wrong with it, just, in other words, for whatever reason, I want to redeem it. So can I do it under those circumstances? So Shmuel said yes. Shmuel says, and that's where we opened up the daf yesterday, Afilo hein Tahor, and even if it's Tahor, you can redeem it. And even though the Mishnah does not seem to indicate that, but the Gemara says, okay, but Shmuel will learn the Mishnah, and he'll, you know, and he explained why the Mishnah said what it said, but that's Shmuel's position. And so for half of yesterday's daf, we grappled with Shmuel's position, that you could redeem the grain before it goes into a Kli Sharis, whether it is Tahor, whether it's Tameh, doesn't matter. Then the Gemara on the bottom of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph brought in other Amoraim with other opinions, notably that of Rav Kahana, and Rav Oshia, and Rav Elazar. So these Amoraim basically all disagreed with Shmuel, you know, but with varying degrees. Our focus is going to be on Rabbi Oshia. And the reason why we're going to be spending so much time focusing on Rav Oshia is because when the Gemara brought in Rav Oshia's position on the bottom of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, so we had two versions of what Rav Oshia said. Rav Oshia, version number one, said, Tamei Niftin, Tarim Mei Niftin. So in version number one, so it comes out simply that he disagrees with Shmuel, that I can only redeem it when it is Tamei, but not when it's Tahor. Another version, Ika Damrei, I'm Rav Oshia, I feel it's Tahor Niftin. So in another version, Rav Oshia agrees with Shmuel. So we had two versions of what Rav Oshia said. And so what we then started yesterday, and we just started yesterday, and so what we're going to do now, I know it's taking a step backwards, but it's good. It'll really get us through the entire sugya from beginning to end, and it'll hopefully have ourselves somewhat better comprehension of the entire sugya. We're going to start from the very bottom of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. We did this yesterday, but let's start again. I'm a Rav Oshia. So we are going to start with the statement of Rabbi Oshia. And in doing so, what we're basically going to try to figure out by the end of this entire sequence of Gemara, which is going to go almost an entire Amud, is basically which version of Rav Oshia is correct. The one in which he disagreed with Shmuel, the one where he agreed with Shmuel. So we start off with the following. Amar Rav Oshia, Shemati Pigol B'mincha L'Rebbe Shimonin Matam T'masochlin. So if I'm a Fagol Ani Mincha, so if I subscribe to Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, so it is not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. And like I said yesterday, I'll say it again right now. There's a lot going on in that one statement. A lot of issues and a lot of principles. So what we're going to do now is we're going to break it apart piece by piece, and then we're going to put it back together again, and we're going to understand it. So did not. So let's start off with the Mishnah. Ha'arla Klai Kerem, Shora Nisko, Egla Rufa, Tzipara Mitzara, Petach Hamor, Basa Bechalav, Kula Matami Tumas Ochlin. So all these things, and I'm not going to go through each one of them right now. I did that yesterday. But all these things, what they have in common is that they are all Isurei Hana'a. So not only are they not, you can't eat them, but you can't benefit from them as well. And they are subject to Tumas Ochlin, meaning it's food. It's edible food. I can't eat it because of Halacha. Okay, wonderful. But in other words, it's food, and therefore because it's food, so therefore it's subject to Tumas Ochlin, meaning it's susceptible to Tumah because it's a food. And it could also convey that Tumah onto other foods, again, with under the right circumstances, but it's a food, even though halacha dictates that I can't eat and I can't benefit from it. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon are Mekulen and Matam and Tumas Ochlen. So Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that they're not Tami Tumas Ochlen. Because I can't eat it and I can't even feed it to somebody else because of the Isra Anah. So therefore, halakhically, we do not view it as food. What is the basis of Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint? The Gemara goes on to explain. On one of the examples, however, he's going to acknowledge that it is subject to Tumas Ochlin because it's Basar B'chalav. And prior to being Basar B'chalav, it was Basar B'chalav. Right? You saw that pause? So the in other words, it was just simply meat and milk separate from one another. Only when it's cooked together is it going to be Asar B'achila Uvahana. So in other words, so for that, it's going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin because it was food. Okay, now the Amrav Asi Amrav Yochem, my time to Rabbi Shimon. What is the basic idea behind Rabbi Shimon? So, as we saw this yesterday, but we get to review again. Mikol Ocher Sheyachel Ochel Shato Yochola Achilo Lachem Kari Ochel Ochel Sheiato Yochola Achilo Lachem Inikar Ochel. Because the Rabbi Shimon darshens the Torah that what is the definition of food? Food is something either I can eat or I can feed to somebody else. As long as I'm in a position where I can eat or somebody else can eat it, it's food. If I can't eat it and I can't even feed it to somebody else, it's not food. It's not halachically food. And so therefore, when something's asur b'hana, so obviously I can't eat it, but I can't even give it to a guy because it's asur b'hana. I'm not allowed to get any benefit from it whatsoever. Gifting something to a guy would have been a benefit, and so therefore you can't do it. You can't eat it and can't feed it to somebody else. And so therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, anything that's asur b'hana is not halachically food. Good. That's point number one. So point number one is that for Rabbi Shimon, the first idea is that when something is asur b'hana, it cannot be eaten, neither by you nor can you give it to a non-Jew to eat it, and so therefore it's not food, and therefore it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. Let's move on. So the Gemara says, now, if you are mefagel mincha, so being mefagel mincha means that the Kohen, when doing one of the four avodas of a mincha, has a machshava of either chutzim zman or chutzim kamo, and he now renders the carbon disqualified. Who can eat the carbon? The answer is absolutely nobody. So we're talking now about a mincha offering that you can't eat, nor can you give it to somebody else to eat. And now, all that's good. Ihachi. So I'm sorry. V'ha'pigol b'mincha nami ocho sheitol yichol achil achermu. So good. So it's, in other words, so it doesn't qualify as a food. So the Gemara says, D'tanya. Now the Gemara says, now why don't we consider Bas B'chalav? Because we learned in a Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Bas B'chalav, Asa B'chila, Mutar B'ana. Now it happens to be that Rabbi Shimon, when it comes to meat and milk, meat cooked together with milk, so he happens to be of the opinion that it's Asa B'chila, but it's not Asa B'ana. Shenemar, Ki'am Kodesh Atal Hashem Lakech, Alos V'asha Gudi B'chalev Imo, Ulahalan Omer V'anshe Kodesh Tiyun Li, Bas B'chalav, Trefa Los Ochelu, Ma Lahalan Asa B'chila, Mutar B'ana, Kan Asa B'chila, Mutar B'ana. So the Gemara is just simply bothered by the fact that Rabbi Shimon, based on the Gzeirah Shavah, and I know I'm going quickly right now, but we did this yesterday, but based on Gzeirah Shavah, teaches me that Basar B'chalav is only Asar B'achila, not Asar B'ana. So the Gemara says, so it comes out now that according to Rabbi Shimon, I can feed it to somebody else. Chad v'od kamar, chad v'ochel sha'ato yochol achila achem hu, v'od l'didei nami ha'isal ha'shasa kosher. So the Gemara says, well, when it comes to Basar B'chalav, there are actually two points to consider in terms of why it's exceptional. It's exceptional because A, you, according to Rabbi Shimon, and again, I'm highlighting, according to Rabbi Shimon, A, I could feed it to others, meaning I could give it to a non-Jew to eat, I'm allowed to get benefit from it, and B, it had a shasa kosher. Meaning before it was basar b'chalav, it was basar and chalav. And so therefore it had a shasa kosher, and for those two reasons, so it's going to be an exception to the rule, and it will be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Huh?
You couldn't make it.
That part's true. But in other words, we're just talking about it from the status of it being a consumable food. It was a consumable food, now it's not. But in other words, but it was. It had a shasa kosher, and so therefore qualifies as food. Okay.
That list is exhaustive?
No, it's a great point. That's a great point. The list is not the list is not exhaustive. Okay, and good. And I saw discussions in terms of, you know, why the list could have mentioned other things. Okay, excellent. All right, Meisvei. Okay, and so with all that stated now, so let's consider the following. So what do we have on the table right now? We have Rabbi Shimon saying that something which is not edible, you can't eat it and you can't feed it to others, does not qualify as food and therefore is not subject to Tumas Ochlin. That's what we have right now on the table. However, we also have on the table that if it at one point in time had a shasa kosher, like meat and milk, So therefore, it is going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay? And now we are going to advance the discussion with a Mishnah. It's in the Mishnah or it's a Braisa, Meisvei. It's a Tosefta. Anyway, Rabbi Shimon Omer. So we already know that this Tosefta is going like Rabbi Shimon. It says on the opening, on the front end. Yesh Nosar Shu Matam Tumas Ochlin, Yesh Nosar Shein Matam Tumas Ochlin. Okay, so Nosar. So if I have a carbon where there's any leftover, and it's beyond the prescribed time where I can no longer eat it, so that is Nosar. Nosar is something that I cannot eat, and I can't get benefit from it as well. And meanwhile, when it comes to Nosar, and the only thing we're allowed to do with the Nosar is burn it. In other words, that's what's done with the leftovers. So you burn it. So now, is it subject to Tumas Ochlin? Is it a food? And again, according to Rabbi Shimon, we think we know what the parameters are. The parameters are is that even if I can't currently eat it right now, but if at one point in time it had a shasa kosher, so it should be fine. So ketzad. So now we're going to make a distinction of one case of nosar where it's a food and one case of nosar where it's not qualified as a food. So lan lifnei zrika, let's say that what happens is as follows. Let's say that I shechted the animal and then we did nothing, absolutely nothing. In other words, you had the blood, you had everything, and you did nothing with it, and you let it lay overnight. So now, next morning, we know that everything is disqualified through Lina. And Einam Tama Tumas Ochlin. And it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. Meaning, even next morning, even if I sprinkle the blood, it's too late to sprinkle the blood. But in other words, everything is disqualified, and it is not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Meaning, even if the meat is rendered edible, so even though the meat was rendered edible, meaning we did shecht it yesterday, but at the same time, also, we didn't sprinkle the blood. So the meat is not consumable. It never was consumable, and so therefore it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. However, la'achar zrika. But let's say we did the following. Let's say we shechted the animal, we sprinkled the blood on the day in which we shechted it. Good, and then the animal was just left overnight. So now it's lina. It's subject to lina. So now mitamit Tumas Ochlin. It is going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. And the reason why is because it had, even though right now it's not consumable, but it had a shasa kosher, and therefore it is subject to Tumas Ochlin. Now, upigol. Now the brace over here contrasts. That's talking about the psul of lina. What about the psul of pigol? Bein b'kachim kasher, bein b'kachim kalim. It doesn't matter if we're talking about karbanos like a chatzis or an asham, or if we're talking about a shlamim. It doesn't matter. Einam mitamit Tumas Ochlin. It is not subject to Tumas Ochlin because it never had a shasa kosher, which we're going to amplify that point in just a little bit. And finally, pigol b'mincha. If let's say you do pigol by a mincha mitamit Tumas Ochlin, it is going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay. So now what we seemingly have now is a problem, because previously we said that according to Rabbi Shimon, if I have something which is consumable, subject to the Tumas Ochlin. If something is not consumable, neither by me or anybody else, it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. And meanwhile, in this Braisa, we opened up with a case where it underwent Lina, which means that it's not edible, and it's subject to Tumas, and I'm sorry, and it's, well, it depends. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It is or it is not subject to Tumas Ochlin, but I don't understand. If it's currently not edible, it shouldn't be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Now, I already kind of gave away the answer. And the Gemara just simply spells it out. Lo kasha, kansha haisala shasa kosher, kansha lo haisala shasa kosher. So the Gemara says, okay. But in other words, even within Rabbi Shimon, if I can't currently eat it, but as long as historically there was a point in time where it was edible, it will be subject to Tumas Ochlin. So over here, that's what we're saying. So hechi dami de lo haisala shasa kosher, da'akta shina b'mechubar. So the Gemara says, now, when it comes to a mincha offering, let's consider. We're talking about a mincha offering that did not have a shasa kosher. Like, it's a real head-scratcher. Like, what is an example of a mincha offering that did not have a shasa kosher? Let's consider. Meaning, at what point, just go over the basic history of how we got to the point where we have a karban mincha. That's now what bothers the Gemara. Right, so let's consider now by a mincha. What happened? What happened is that we went to the field, we harvested grain, took off trumas and maestros, and then with the grain we ground it, we sifted it, and we put it into a kli sharis. Up until that point in time, it was chul and gamur. It was perfectly edible flour. And then you put it into a kli sharis, and then you take off the comets. But in other words, but before all this point in time, It was chulin, it was perfectly edible. So if you're telling me that the whole distinction is whether it did or did not have a shas of kosher, where it was historically there was a point where somebody was allowed to eat it, and therefore it's subject to tumas ochlin, so by the mincha, isn't that always the case? And I don't understand, says the Gemara. Why by mincha, you're mefagel by mincha, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not subject to tumas ochlin. If it had a shas of kosher, which presumably it did, it should be subject to tumas ochlin. That is the Gemara's question. So hechidami dolaisel shas of kosher. So the Gemara says, so when would be a scenario where it did not have a shas kosher? The Akteshina ben Mechubar. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about a case where you were maktish the grains while they were still connected to the ground. Okay? So the Gemara says, velifrikinu. So the Gemara says, so now, here's what I don't understand. So interesting. So you were maktish the grains while they were connected to the ground. So you know you could redeem them. Meaning, at this point in time, aren't they redeemable? And now, finally, and I know it took us a while to get to this point, but finally, now we're going to go all the way back to the beginning of why we brought all this here, just to get to this one juncture of the Gemara. Now, if the version of Rav Oshia, which is the correct version, is that if something is tahor, it is non-redeemable, so then I got it. So in other words, we're talking about grains that I was matish while they were connected, and why don't I redeem them? And the answer is, according to this version, I can't redeem them. Okay, perfect. So then we have set up a scenario in which the grains are from the time that they grew in the ground, while they were still connected to the ground. They were muktash, they were sanctified. Granted, they only have kedushas damim, but Rav Oshia's position is that as long as they're tahor, as long as they're not tame, so I can't redeem them. So then, great. But elalach lishon damar afilo tahor niftin lefrikinu. So the Gemara says, but if I work with the position that, according to Rav Oshia, he agrees with Shmuel, and I can redeem it whether it's tahor or whether it's tameh, so question on the table is, why don't we redeem it? And at least you have the ability to redeem it, and so why don't you redeem it? So hashtami lo parik. So the Gemara says, okay, but you didn't redeem it. So because you didn't redeem it, it didn't have a shas of kosher, it didn't have a moment of eligibility, and so therefore, that's why it's not subject to tumas ochlin. So the Gemara says, "V'ikavan di ba'i parik lei shemin l'Rabbi Shimon damar kol ha'omid leftos kepadu dami." And so now, what this opens up now is a new door for our discussion in today's daf. Let's think about this. Now, I know already it is extraordinarily complicated, but let's consider now. We're talking about a case where the Gemara constructed, where it was grain still growing out of the ground. I was makdishit at that point in time, and we are now saying that the reason why I didn't redeem it is because I couldn't redeem it. And to which the Gemara says, because if I could have redeemed it, so then it had a shas of kosher. The Gemara balked at that because the Gemara says, yeah, but Lamaisa, we didn't redeem it, and so that shouldn't make a difference. And now here comes a new avenue in the Gemara, and that is, remember, our entire discussion today is revolving around the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. It happens to be that in conjunction with Rabbi Shimon's position regarding Tumas Ochlin, Rabbi Shimon has another principle that we see throughout Shas, and that's the principle of Kol HaOmed. The principle of Kol HaOmed is, as long as there is something which you could have done, Halacha views it as if it's already done. Right? And we have many different examples of Kol HaOmed, but let's stick with what we have right now in the Gemara in front of us. Kol HaOmed Liftos, anything that stands to be redeemed, Kepadui Dami, as if it's already redeemed. So that means to say that, yes, it's true that we were makdish the grains while they were connected to the ground. And the Gemara's suggestion of, well, why don't we redeem them? The Gemara says, yeah, but we didn't redeem them. But if we're talking about Rabbi Shimon, which we are, and Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that kol ha'omed, that anything stands to be done, we view it as a halach as if it's already done. So therefore, that means that these grains now should be considered redeemed. Good.
Potential.
Yeah, the potential is viewed as actual. That's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. And so now what the Gemara is bothered by is that even if I didn't redeem them, Halacha should view them as if they're already redeemed. D'tanya, and the Gemara says, and how do I know that this is Rabbi Shimon's position? So the Gemara supports this with a brisa. Rabbi Shimon Omer Parah Metami Tumas Ochlin Hol V'Haisal Shas HaKosher. So we're talking now about the Parah Duma. Now the Parah Duma, we have identified a red cow. We like it. It looks good. We are now going to designate it as a Parah Duma. So good, it has Kedusha. Now, as we've said already numerous times, the Parah Duma is not a carbon. Of course, it's not a carbon. It's shechted outside the base of Mikdash. So it only has Kedushas Damim. That part's all true. But, in other words, but in many areas in Halacha, we treat it like a carbon. And as such, The Rabbi Shimon says, now let's say you have the paraduma, and let's say you shecht it, it is subject to Tumas Ochlin. Subject to Tumas Ochlin, meaning it's who is allowed to eat it? So to which the Amar Ish Lakish Omar Yerbi Shimon para niftes agav marachta. So the Gemara says, you know, that we have the potential of redeeming the paraduma at any point in time. Even after you shecht it, you could redeem the paraduma. Now, why in the world would you want to redeem a paraduma? Meaning, wouldn't we want to shecht it, burn it, and use its ashes for tahara? And as we're going to see later in the Gemara, well, that's true. But if I have a paraduma, even if I find a nicer paraduma, so then I want to redeem this so I can use a nicer paraduma. Okay, anyway, here comes the point. The point is that what do you see clearly over here? That according to Rabbi Shimon, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Why? Because since we have the potential to redeem it, so therefore it is viewed as if it's already redeemed. Halacha views it as if it's redeemed. And therefore we consider it to be edible. Good. Now the Gemara says, Parniftas agav marachta, hachi hashta. So the Gemara says, okay, that's true, but bishlam apara omenes lifdosi shimatzacharos na'im and a mitzvah lifdosa. By Para Aduma, we're going to use the principle of Kola Omeid. Because consider that by the Para Aduma, if we find a nicer animal, so then we are encouraged, we are motivated to redeem this in order to use the other animal. However, Elahani Menachos Mitzvah of Dosa, but if you have a Mincha offering, what's motivating us to redeem it? Nothing. Meaning the Gemara is asking rhetorically, oh, should we be redeeming a Mincha? No. I understood that under certain circumstances it becomes tamei, fine. But under normal circumstances, there's nothing motivating us to redeem it. What we want to do with the mincha is we want to offer the mincha. So are you really going to compare the idea of kol ha'omed as it relates to the paraduma to the kol ha'omed regarding the mincha? The Gemara says, okay. But let's consider the following. V'ha'lan lefnei zrika de mitzvah lemizrikei v'bayzarek. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's go back to a braisa that we learned previously. So, we talked about an animal that underwent lina. And it underwent lina before Zrika. So, again, the scenario is you shechted an animal, and then you did nothing. Nothing. You didn't sprinkle the blood. You did nothing. And then everything stayed overnight. Next morning, it's all disqualified. And it's all disqualified, and that means that according to Rabbi Shimon, because it never had a shasa kosher, it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. But let's consider. On the day when you shechted it, so in other words, you shechted it. Let's even go so far as to say you collected the blood in the bowl. I said you did nothing, but let's at least have the blood in the bowl. Now, you didn't do Zrika. Could you have done Zrika? Sure, but you didn't. Now, isn't Rabbi Shimon operating with the principle of Kol HaOmeid? Because there's a potential of me being able to do Zrika, and I got nothing left but to do Zrika, so Kol HaOmeid Lizro Kizarek Dami. And you're telling me that according to Rabbi Shimon, so because of the potential of me sprinkling, we view it as if it's already sprinkled, much like by the Paraduma, when you had the chance of redeeming it, we view it as if it's already redeemed. So why don't we take his principle of Kol HaOmeid and apply it to Zrika? Now, if we were to do that, that now means that the animal, in fact, does have a Shasa kosher, it has a moment of eligibility, and therefore should be subject to Tumas Ochlin. That's the Gemara's question. And meanwhile, the Braisa that we learned above says very clearly, it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin, but the Gemara says, but I don't understand. How does that work with Rabbi Shimon's principle of Kol HaOmeid? So the Gemara says, okay, the case of the Braisa is super specific. It's talking about a scenario in which you shechted it right before sunset. So there wasn't even time to sprinkle the blood. So in other words, it did not even have a kol ha'omeid moment. The Gemara says, really? That's interesting. So that means to say now that here's a distinction that we can make. Whether I shechted it 30 seconds before sunset or whether I shechted it 2 minutes before sunset. I don't mean 30 seconds, but you know what I mean. In other words, right before sunset. So now, interesting. So here we have an opportunity to make a sharp distinction of when I shechted an animal. So if I shechted it immediately before sunset, so then I don't even have the potential. So we don't say kol ha'omeid. And if I shechted it just a couple minutes before sunset, so we had a chance to sprinkle it, and then therefore we have the kol ha'omeid. Once the braisa had an opportunity like that to make that kind of distinction, why would it make a more basic distinction when this is a much crisper and sharper distinction? And isn't the Braisas and the Mishnayos always interested on turning on a much sharper point? So the Gemara says, Ad Tani Lan Lachar Zrika Mitam Tumas Ochlin Lif Lug Bidida. And the Braisa should have made this very distinction. Why didn't the Braisa make that distinction? So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? Read the Braisa carefully, and you'll read this into the Braisa. Meaning this distinction that we just made, that's really what the Braisa meant. We just have to know how to read the Braisa. So Hachinami Kamar. Lan Kodem Shi Yeira Elizrika. This is how we're now going to read the Braisa. If it experienced Lina before it was fit for Zrika. Now I know the Braisa didn't say the word Yeira, but we're reading it into the Braisa. So I am Matamitomasochlan. Lacher Shi Yeira Elizrika, Matamitomasochlan. Good. So that's how we're going to read it into the Braisa. Now the Gemara says, Vaha Pigo Bain Bikashi Kadashim Bain Bikashim Kalam Mitzvah Lemizrike. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's go on into the Braisa. Meaning, because remember now, once we now have this principle of Kola Omeid, so it creates a whole bunch of issues. Good. So we were able to explain away the part of the Braisa that has to do with Lina. Because again, if I had the opportunity to sprinkle, and this is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, which it is, we have the principle of Kola Omeid. So we sidestepped that issue by simply saying that the Braisa was talking about a case where I shechted it right before sunset, so I didn't even have a Kola Omeid opportunity. The Gemara says, fine. But consider, what else did the Braisa talk about? Talk about the case of Pigel. Now, let's assume right now, when can the Kohen do Pigel? So he could do it either at Shechita, or at Kabbalah Sadam, or at Holacha, or at Zrika. Let's assume right now that he did Pigel at Zrika. Okay? So that means to say the Shechita was done correctly. So was Kabbalah Sadam, so was Holacha. And right now, when is he Mefagel at the point of Zrika? Now, and I know the Braisa didn't say that, but let's assume that for now. If that's true, once again, we have the Kol HaOmeid issue. The Gemara says, and the Gemara makes exactly this point. So we know that we're at the point of Zrika, where the correct thing to do is to do Zrika. And if I can now just call out the Kohen, and not to be Mefago. But, okay, but he's going to be Mefago. But anyway, V'i Baye, as we turn now to the top of Kuf Beis Amad Aleph, V'i Baye Zarek. Now, certainly at this point in time, there's an opportunity to do Zrika. Meanwhile, in the Braisa of Rabbi Shimon, it says that it's not Metamei Tumas Ochlin. So, my love, the pickle b'Zrika, and the Gemara now sets up the question. Let's assume that we're talking about the pickle was done at the point of Zrika. So, like I said a moment ago, Shechita was done correctly, so was Kabbalah Sadam, so was Halacha. And so the only thing left on the table is Zrika. And this is Rabbi Shimon. Kol ha'ome lizro kizarug dami. That as long as it stands to be sprinkled, we view it as if it's already sprinkled. And since we're viewing as if it's already sprinkled, it has a moment of eligibility, and because of that, it should be Metamei Tumas Ochlin. Now, I know that sentence was a mouthful. I know that. But in other words, but that's exactly what bothers the Gemara right now, because you have to take into consideration the principle of Kol HaOmeid, to which the Gemara says, my love, depikul b'zrika, lo depikul b'shechita. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's just change an assumption that we made. We assume that the pickle occurred during Zrika. The Gemara says, no, it occurred during Shechita. Because the pickle now occurred during Shechita, so now there's no longer a moment of Kol HaOmeid. We only say Kol HaOmeid when the only thing left on the table is Zrika. So if the only thing left on the table is to do Zrika, so then we could say Kol HaOmeid, because we're able to look at the potential. But if we're already back at the point of Shechita, so we don't say Kol HaOmeid. So the Gemara says, "My love, the pickle b'zrika, lo the pickle b'shechita." Aval pickle b'zrika, my hachinami de metamei tumas ochlin. So once again, the Gemara says, "So here now we have an opportunity to make a really sharp and crisp distinction between if you're mefagel at shechita versus you're mefagel at zrika." And the Gemara says, "Ad ni pickle b'mincha." Now you saw what the Braisa did earlier. The Braisa shuffled on to another scenario of being mefagel by a mincha. Why did the Braisa do that? Stay right here. I'm being mefagel an animal, and make a very sharp and crisp distinction between being mefagel at the point of Zrika, where you have the principle of Kol HaOmeid, versus being mefagel at the point of Shechita, where I don't have the principle of Kol HaOmeid. Why didn't the Braisa do that? So ad ni pigel b'mincha metamei tumas ochlin liflag b'dida ba'medvar mamorim de pigel b'shechita va pigel b'zrika metamei tumas ochlin. So why did the Braisa shuffle on to the case of mincha? But the Gemara goes on to explain. I'll tell you why. The Braisa did so for a very specific reason. Pigol b'mincha itzterichle. No. As far as pigol by mincha is concerned, the Braisa went on to that case because it wanted to make a very specific point. The afagav de pigol b'kemitza, the komitz b'mincha kishchita dami. Because as we have said so many times throughout Menachos and Zvachim, Yeah, four avodos by mincha, which correspond to four avodos by a behema. By a behema, shchita, kabbalas adam, holach hazrika. By a mincha, kamitza, kodesh hakamitza, taking the kamitza and putting it into a second kli shareis, walking that over to the mizbeach, and then burning the kamitza on the top of the mizbeach. Mm-hmm. So the four avodas correspond to of the behema correspond to the four avodas of a mincha. So let's say in the first parallel, what do we have? We have shchita of an animal, and we have the kamitza of a mincha. So if that parallel is a good parallel, which it is, so now, what do we know regarding shchita of an animal? So there was never a shas heter, because if I'm mefagel at the point of shchita, so it never had a shas heter, even according to Rabbi Shimon, even who subscribes to the principle of kol ha'omed, but we're too early in the process. So it never had a shas hakosher, and therefore it's not tamei tumas ochlin. But by a mincha, even with the parallel, it's not true. Because consider, by a mincha, so let's say you're a mefagel by a mincha, by the kamitza. Oh, you see kamitza and shchita are the same thing. Yes and no. They are the same thing, meaning in terms of avodas, they parallel one another, but consider, when I had an animal before shchita, was I allowed to eat the animal? Of course not. In other words, it's a behema chaya. It's a live animal. Avram and achai, the yisar venu shchuta, I can't eat it. By the mincha, was I able to eat the mincha prior to? Yes. Of course. So in other words, so even with the parallel, you still can't compare, for Tumas Ochlin purposes, you can't compare an animal to a mincha. And that's the point the Brisa wanted to make, and the Gemara spells this out. Afilu hachi metame Tumas Ochlin hov ha'islo shasa kosher mikaro. Because prior to it becoming a mincha offering, it was just simply flour and oil. And perfectly edible, and therefore subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, that already today is a mouthful. Like I'd be fine if we all just went home, and we take a nap and that'd be wonderful. But the Gemara goes on. Okay, so where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So this idea of Rabbi Shimon that if something had a shasa kosher, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. If it did not have shasa kosher, it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. And also, to factor into the discussion, Rabbi Shimon's general position of kol ha'omed, which means to say that as long as we have one step remaining, as long as I potentially could have done it, we view it as if it's already done. And so because of these two principles, so we had to navigate through the Braisa. And it wasn't easy navigation, right? It was choppy. But we navigated. We ended up getting through the entire Braisa. I'm Rav Ashi. I'm Yisrael Shemaisa Kameh de Rav Nachman. And Rav Ashi says, now I went over this entire circuit with Rav Nachman. And yeah, for those of you who have been around for a while with the Daf, so you know that Rav Ashi and Rav Nachman didn't live in the same generation. So this dialogue between Rav Ashi and Rav Nachman is problematic. And you can see Tosos, who is also bothered by this as well. But anyway, so I went over this entire discussion. And Afilo Tema Lan Mamish. Afilo Tema De Pigel Bezrika. And look. I know that we spent a lot of good quality time navigating through the Braisa, trying to untangle Rabbi Shimon. But I'll tell you what. Let's go back to the Braisa. Leave the Braisa in the simplest readings that we had. Let's say that the Braisa was talking about where it experienced lina, and like real lina, meaning I shechted the animal. Yeah, I could have sprinkled it, but I had time to sprinkle it, and I didn't. And the Braisa talks about pigel. Let's even say that the pigel occurred during the point of Zrika, not back at the point of Shechita. Just keep everything simple. And I'm still not bothered. Why am I not bothered? Says Rav Nachman. De'i by parik amar, ibay havizarek lo amrinan. Because even in Rabbi Shimon's principle of kol ha'omed, we're going to make the following distinction. And I'm saying the Gemara over like Rashi, right? Rashi. The Gemara doesn't spell it out as clearly as Rashi does, but Rashi does, and I'm saying it over like Rashi. Look, when we're talking about the paraduma, what do we say? Kol ha'omed liftos kepadu idami. We're talking about redeeming. Redeeming is not a big deal. In other words, physically speaking, what do I have to do to redeem it? Just simply designate that the kedusha of this animal is going to transfer onto money. That's it. So there, Rabbi Shimon is more than prepared to say kol ha'omed liftos, because I could potentially redeem it, and the act of redeeming is not a physical act. It doesn't require a maisa. It's just simply a designation. That's fine. But when we're talking about zrikas hadam, that's an action. That's a maisa. So even Rabbi Shimon over there would not say kol ha'omed lizro kezarek dami, because I know potentially I could sprinkle, but I just don't simply look at it as hey, I could have sprinkled, therefore it's good enough. No, it's a maisa that I need to do, so there we won't say kol ha'omed. That's Rav Nachman's understanding of the differences between Rabbi Shimon's kol ha'omed principle by pigeon versus Rabbi Shimon's kol ha'omed by zrika, meisvei. And to which the Gemara says, let's challenge that point. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua. So here now we're going to move on. We're going to still discuss the same idea of Shasa Kosher versus not having a Shasa Kosher, but we're going to leave the world of Tumah and Tumas Ochlin, and we're going to enter into the world of Me'ila. Now by Me'ila, here's the rule. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua, Kol Shahai, Klal Amar Rabbi Yehoshua, sorry. The Mishnah Me'ila tells us, the beginning of Masechta Me'ila, and this is as a big general rule by Me'ila. Now Me'ila, we know, is misappropriation. Something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, something that is designated to go onto the Mizbeach, is subject to the Isra Me'ila. Any one of us who were to misappropriate from that Karban is subject to the Isra Me'ila with all of its punishments, which we're not discussing right now. When we get to Masechta Me'ila, we'll discuss it in great detail. But here's a basic operating rule, which is, Kosha Aisa lo shas heter lekohanim ein mo'alim bo. V'chosha lo Aisa lo shas heter lekohanim mo'alim bo. If at one point historically the Kohanim were able to eat this Karban, and then a subsequent disqualification occurs, no Me'ila. If, however, the Kohanim never had a Shas Kosher, so then it is subject to Me'ila. And the Mishnah goes on to speak out. Ezuhu Shas Heter LeKohanim, Shelana, Shenitma, Sheyatza. If, let's say, any of the disqualifications were Lina, or Tuma, or Yotze, having left the Azara, so that's a situation where it had a Shas Kosher. Ezu shelo haisalo shasa kosher lekohanim shenishchet chutz lezmana chutz lemkoma, what we call pigle shekabla psulim v'zarko sadam is dama, or let's say a non-kohen did the zrika sadam, sorry, did the kabbalah sadam, where he disqualifies it right there and then. Anyway, that's the Mishnah in Me'ila. Now, did you watch carefully? What was one of the examples in the Mishnah Me'ila? Ketani miyareisha shalana v'shenitma v'shiyatza. Now we're talking as one of the examples of where it did have a Shasa Kosher, Lina. Now, my love, Lina, Lana Mamash. Now, what's the case of Lina? So, the Gemara basically says, I think I know. The case of Lina is, you shechted the animal, and then you did nothing. And you just let the whole thing ride overnight. And meanwhile, the Mishnah describes it as a Shas Heter LeKohanim. That's such a head-scratcher. You shechted the carbon, you did nothing, and that's a Shas Heter LeKohanim. So right now, what the Gemara is thinking is, oh, I know why Shas Heter LeKohanim, because you potentially could have sprinkled it, and the Mishnah in Me'ila is going like Rabbi Shimon, and it's operating with the word Kol HaOmed. But the problem, of course, is that remember what Rav Nachman taught us just a moment ago, that Rabbi Shimon is not ready to say Kol HaOmed when it comes to Zrika, and if we're right about the Mishnah is telling us that we are ready to say Kol HaOmed as it relates to Zrika. V'hachadi by Havazarik v'hu v'ketani ein mo'alin, it's not subject to Me'ila. So lo. The Gemara says, okay, I hear you, it's a strong question, but I'm going to disagree with your basic understanding of that Mishnah. Ru'uya latzeis, ru'uya latame, ru'uya lalin. It didn't actually experience these, meaning that it could have experienced these, meaning because it was done correctly, so therefore it is eligible for all these disqualifications. That's what the Mishnah meant. And that's why it did, in fact, have a Shas Heter LeKohanim.
But isn't Ruya similar to Omid?
No. It just simply, meaning what the Gemara said, when the Mishnah presented the word Lana, we thought it meant, I shechted it and didn't do a thing. What the Gemara is saying is, no, you shechted it and you sprinkled the blood. Not Kola Omid, you actually sprinkled the blood. What did the Mishnah mean when it said Lana? It means Omid Lelina, or Ruya Lelina, meaning it could have experienced Lena. Because you know it's a carbon that we did correctly. So the Gemara says, Avalina Mamish Mai, Hachanami de Ma'alin. So the Gemara says, okay, so if experienced Lina, so you tell me subject to Me'ila. So hi kol shihaya lo shas hetal akwanim vachoshalo aisalo shas hetal akwanim, kol shiyesh lo shas hetal akwanim ein mo'alamba, vachoshain lo shas hetal akwanim mo'alamba, mi ba'ile. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you now what bothers me. What bothers me is the verbiage of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah was speaking in past tense, meaning the Mishnah was talking about where it did have a Shas Heter LeKohanim. It sounds like we're talking about historical, past tense, meaning that it went through Lina, and now next morning, it did have a Shas Heter LeKohanim because of the principle of Kol HaOmed. If you're right that we sprinkle the blood, so it didn't say, the Mishnah should not have said it did have a Shas Heter, but it does have a Shas Heter LeKohanim, so the Gemara is offended by the verbiage. So Elam Ravashi Me'ila Atuma Karamis. So Ravashi says, I'll tell you what. Let's leave the Mishnah in Me'ila as it is. And I'm still not going to be bothered by Akasha. And again, what's the question? The question is, is that we asserted, Rav Nachman asserted, that there's limitations of Rabbi Shimon's Kol HaOmed. Kol HaOmed Liftos, that's fine. That's Pidyon. I'm sorry. Kol HaOmed Liftos, Kepadui Dami, that's just Pidyon. That's easy. Kol HaOmed Lizrok, no, because that's an action. And Rabbi Shimon won't say Kol HaOmed Lizrok. Meanwhile, the Mishnah Me'ilah, we do see, now again, I know the Mishnah Me'ilah is not Rabbi Shimon, I know it's Rabbi Yeshua, but it's the same idea. That the Mishnah, they were saying that it underwent Lina, and but because I could have sprinkled it, so therefore we're saying Kol HaOmed. How come we're saying it over there, but not in the case of Tumas Ochlin? So Rav Ashi says, I'll tell you why none of this bothers me. So I'm Rav Ashi Me'ilah, Tumah Karamis Me'ilah Mishum Kedusha V'lav Kedusha Hi. Labasa Depaka La Kedushasa B'mai Hadra Rachva La. If we're talking about Me'ilah, so really it's a function of Kedusha. And you see, Rabbi Shimon there is prepared to say Kol HaOmed because I could have sprinkled it, and because I could have sprinkled it, we view it as if it's sprinkled, and so therefore the Kedusha now is gone. And now what? You want to say that the Kedusha is going to come back and therefore you should be subject to Me'ilah? No. But over here in our discussion, we're talking about Tumas Ochlin. Tumas Ochlin, what is the guiding principle of Tumas Ochlin? Is it or is it not edible? That's all we need to know. Tumah mishum uchla, v'lav uchlahu. That's the only thing as it relates to Tumas Ochlin. And therefore, kol hecha di'i bai zarek matzi zarek lei, mashle uchla, umetami Tumas Ochlin. Hecha di'i bai zarek lo matzi zarek lei, mashle uchla, umetami Tumas Ochlin. I'm sorry, v'lo umetami Tumas Ochlin. So when it comes to Tumas Ochlin, so I don't just simply look at the potential. Because over here, for the status of Tumas Ochlin, I just need to know, was it physically edible or was it not edible? Now, I know I inserted the word physically edible, but meaning, lamaisa, could I eat it or could I not eat it? And as far as that's concerned, Rabbi Shimon's not going to use this principle of Kol HaOmed in terms of guiding us and telling us whether it was or was not edible. Vis-a-vis Kedusha, so Rabbi Shimon's going to use that principle. Kedusha and Me'ilah, but vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, no. Okay, we could just pause for a moment, breathe for a moment. Where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So again, between yesterday's daf and today's daf, it was just a question of untangling Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that something that has Shas Kosher is eligible to Tumas Ochlin, something that does not have a Shas Heter, does not have a status of Tumas Ochlin, and we also have to balance that with Rabbi Shimon's principle of Kol HaOmed, and that's what the Gemara has been doing for the last daf and a half. We're almost done. Meitzvei. Hamevi Hashem Tolui v'nodu shlo chata. A person brings an Hashem Tolui. So in Masech Tekrisus, we discuss this at length. Right now, to say it succinctly, a person may or may not have violated Nisr Kares. He ate a piece of fat, not knowing and unsure whether it was chalev or shuman. So there's a special carbon that he brings. It's called an Hashem Tolui. And what's going to happen is he'll bring the carbon Hashem Tolui, and then at a later point in time, if he discovers that he actually ate chalev, He'll bring a carbon chatas. If he didn't eat chalev, okay, the Hashem Tolui took care of him in the interim. It's an interim solution to this problem. The mission over here in Krisus deals with another number of fun topics within Hashem Tolui. And that is, let's say you set aside your Hashem Tolui and then you discover you didn't need it. So basically, cancel the order. So are you able to cancel the order of an Hashem Tolui? That's the mission in Krisus. Why are we learning this now? You'll see. So maybe Hashem Tolui v'nodu shlo chatam. So let's say you brought Hashem Tolui, but right now you just were makdish the animal. But then this discovery was made, it wasn't chalev. You now know for sure it was not chalev. Ima shlo nishcha nodu lo. So yatsa v'yirebe eidu div Reb Meir. So let's say it was before shchita of the carbon Hashem Tolui. So according to Reb Meir, okay, order canceled. Good. As far as the animal is concerned, animal reverts to being back to chulin. You only were makdish it under the premise that you needed it as an Hashem Tolui, but you don't need it anymore. Reb Meir says, go ahead, cancel the order. The Chachamim Omrim, and the Chachamim say no. If we turn to the Amud Beis. Yireh Achi Stavi Yemaka V'yivim Plu Damav L'Nedava. No, it has carbon status. The only thing that you can do is wait till it gets a blemish and redeem it. And the proceeds of that redemption should go to Nedava. But in other words, you can't just simply cancel the order. Okay, now, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Yakriv She'im Eino Ba'al Chet Zahar Yizeh Ba'al Chet Acher. And Rabbi Eliezer's position, the one I enjoy hearing the most, is, you know what? Bring it. Just offer it. Because if it's not for this one, for this aver that you did, You got a closet full of averas, and Rashi points out over here, this is consistent because Rabbi Eliezer, we're going to hear this a lot when we get to Krisus. Misnadev Adam Asham Tolu Bechol Yom. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you can offer an Asham Tolu every day, meaning there's something there in the closet that it's going to apply for. You're right, guilty.
You're guilty and
right, correct. anyway, so the Mishanishchat. Now let's say like this. Let's say you discovered you didn't need the Asham Tolu, but the discovery came only after you shechted the carbon Asham Tolu. So now what do you do? So Mishanishchat no dolo, Adam Yishafech Vabas Yisaref. So that now you can't offer it because you don't need it, but you shechted it. So what do you do? Disposal. Blood gets poured down the canal. The meat is going to get burnt. Burnt meaning disposal. Disposal burning, not mizbeach burning. Nizrak hadam. Now let's say you set aside the carbon, you shechted the carbon, you sprinkled the blood, and after you sprinkled the blood, now and only now you discovered that wasn't the chalav you ate. Right, people came over to you and said, "No, you're absolutely wrong. It was not chalev." And now, but we shechted the carbon and we sprinkled the blood. Now what? So now what? Yeachel. Okay. In other words, but up until the point of shechita, it was considered an asham talui, and so therefore we went through the whole procedure. So now the kohanim get to sit down that day and that night, and they get to eat the meat of an asham talui. Good. Now, Rabbi Yossi Omer, and this is why we're bringing it in right now to hear the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi Omer, afilu adam bekos yizarek v'abasar yechal. Rabbi Yossi said, now if the blood is in the bowl and then you discover it, sprinkle it. Why? Well, this is Rabbi Yossi, it's not Rabbi Shimon, but we can easily guess, and we don't have to guess because the Gemara is going to tell us in just a moment, that Rabbi Yossi must be subscribing to Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint. And v'amar rava Rabbi Yossi b'shitas Rabbi Shimon amar damar kol ha'omer lizorek zarek dami. So I'll tell you why, because this is Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon says that kol ha'omer lizorek zarek dami. That's Rabbi Shimon, and that's Rabbi Yossi over here, and all this becomes now a problem. Because if you remember earlier this morning, what Rav Ashi wanted to try to argue is that even though Rabbi Shimon says kol ha'omer, that's for things like pidyon, but that's not for things like zrika, because zrika is an action, and we're not going to say kol ha'omer as it relates to zrika. That's what Rav Ashi wanted to say earlier. But if we're right in our understanding of Rabbi Yossi, and when I say we, I mean Rava. If Rava's right about his understanding of Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Yossi really conforms to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, so then we're applying the principle of Kol HaOmed even by Zrika. So the Gemara says, Midu Taima. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not really what's generating Rav Yossi's position. It's not because he agrees with Rabbi Shimon. Amri ba marava mishmei de Rabbi Yossi ba Rabbi Chanina hain time de Rav Yossi de kesavah klishars mekashin es apsulim lechatchila likarev. No, Rav Yossi's position, when the blood gets into the bowl and I get to sprinkle it, even though I discover that he didn't need the Asham Talui before sprinkling, it has nothing to do with the principle of Kol HaOmed. It has to do with the principle of klisharis. Klisharis is able to invest a kedusha to the blood. And even though I now no longer need to sprinkle it, because he discovered that he didn't need it, but because now it has gone to a klisharis is able to push it forward and push it through and allow it to be sprinkled. That's the basis of Rabbi Yossi. Good, right. And because now it's in the klisharis, so because it's now in the klisharis now, even though before we sprinkled it, so and we discovered I don't need it, the klisharis is able to push it through. So Amalei Rav Ashla Rav Kahana Midam Rabbi Shem Kol HaOmer Lizrok Kesarav Dami Kol HaOmer Lizrof Nami Kesarav Dami. So the Gemara says, now let's go. Let's ask a simple question. And Ben, you were kind of alluding to this question a little bit earlier. You know, Rabbi Shimon says Kol HaOmer Lizrok Kesarav Dami. Now again, Rav Ashi balks a little bit in that position, but let's say that that's Rabbi Shimon's position. So then Kol HaOmer Lizrof Kesarav Dami, meaning, as long as we have the right to look at the potential, and we say that because potentially it could be there, halacha allows us to view it as if we're there already. If something is potentially could be burnt, we view it as if it's already burnt. Para amay metamin tumas ochlin, afra ba'amaninu. So by the case of the para aduma, you know what we're going to do with the para aduma? We're going to burn it. According to Rabbi Shimon, going to burn it is tantamount to it being burnt, because kol ha'omed. And so therefore, what did we say earlier? We said, well, the paraduma is subject to tumas ochlin. Why? Because it's omed liftos. I know it's omed liftos. You know what it's also omed? Omed lisarif. We should be burning it. So we really have competing omeds by the Parah Adumah. So why are we so focused on, well, I could redeem it. You know what I also could do? And by the way, I could even say better. Not only could I burn it,
it's more likely to be,
right,
burned, than
it's more likely to be burned than to be redeemed. Right. And so the kola omed lisrof, shouldn't that be a more compelling argument than the kola omed liftos? Such a good question. And the Gemara is the answer. So the Gemara says, well, that's true, but we also have what's called chibas hakodesh. Chibas hakodesh is that if I have a karban, so even though it's something which is, let's say, for example, inedible, like wood, chibas hakodesh tells us that it's we're going to view it as susceptible to tumah because of the regard and the high esteem that we have for things that are going to be used as a karban. I'll go back to a point that I made earlier this morning. We're talking about the paraduma. It's not a karban, but we're going to, in this regard, we're going to treat it like a karban. Okay, so chibas hakodesh. So I'm le ravina le ravashi nehida mahanya le chibas hakodesh le ifsu le degufe le krei tami nami le mimne bei rishon visheni. Oh wait, okay, look. You want to throw out the chibas hakodesh card? That's fine. You want to say that we're gonna view the meat of the paraduma as susceptible to tumah because of chibas hakodesh, even though we have a counter kol haomed, the counter kol haomed of kol nisra, kol asorif, kol haomed lisrof. So fine, but chibas hakodesh is gonna be our ace in the deck. So the Gemara says that's fine, but I can understand that in terms of it becoming susceptible to tumah. But its ability to be metame other things, is chibas hakodesh going to allow us to not only say that it's going to become tame, but also have the power to be metame? So the Gemara says tifshat by Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, you know, Reish Lakish asked the following question: I have particles of flour of a mincha, which is not, didn't come into contact with oil. And is it going to, and the reason why it's susceptible to tumah is based on the principle of chibas hakodesh, because it has not yet been mukhshar lekabel tumah. And the reason why it is tameh is because of chibas hakodesh, its susceptibility to tumah of chibas hakodesh. And Reish Lakish wants to know, does that mean that it becomes tameh and it's also able to be metameh other things as well? And mi baile le Reish Lakish dar raisa ki kamrin de rabban. So the Gemara says, look, Reish Lakish was asking the question on a dar raisa level. We are discussing it only on a rabbinic level. So the Gemara says, so even though over here we're saying it clearly on a rabbinic level, what Reish Lakish wanted to know is that also going to be true on a Daraisa level? Okay, stop over here. Tomorrow, we'll pick it up tomorrow with the Mishnah. Okay, admittedly, I said in the front that I'll say on the back end as well. This was a difficult daf. It was. Because we're taking a lot of difficult concepts of Tumas Ochlin, concepts of Kola Omeid, and we're trying to navigate through Braisas and through Mishnayos, and it was tricky. You know, if you didn't get the first time, right, it took me, I'll be honest with you, in other words, I've been doing this for a while, right? Just, I'm saying it as words of encouragement for all of us. If you didn't get the first time, do it again, and do it again, and listen to it a bunch of times. Eventually, it sinks in, I promise.